I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
It's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that is Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of them.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative networks, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum.
And
what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning, and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuning in live this Friday, March 18th, 2022 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride, and it is a wild and dystopic ride. A little bit of history first. It's Friday, right? Friday, March 18th, 2022. History that we have not outlived yet. Just some fun things real quick. On this day in history, in 1314, Jacques de Molay was burned at the stake. You know, the Grand Master of the Knights Templar, 23rd and last Grand Master, they say, burned at the stake. And Bill Clinton was a member of de Molay. There are a number of other folks who have been, are, and have been. So that's kind of fun and interesting. What else? On this day in 1438, Albert II of Habsburg dynasty became king of the Romans in 1438. And that gets to, I think, the issue of intrigue and why I think that London is an interesting city that is part of a longer tale that we are encouraged not to remember or discover. And last but not least, on this day, in 1766, the British Parliament repealed the Stamp Act, and that's an interesting story, too, coming forward in time. So, speaking of the Stamp Act, I have talked from time to time about John Adams in particular, his recounting of James Otis' defense of the Boston merchants and the way that Adams put it. He said that Mr. Otis, well, the way that he put it to William Tudor in 1818, James Otis argued for 4 or 5 hours against the Acts of Trade as revenue laws and against writs of assistance as a tyrannical engine to execute them. And so he was recounting this to William Tudor 57 years after the fact, which is pretty amazing. Must mean something, must be significant. So the timeline of the era, just to go back a little bit, because we don't really hear much about this, significant, you know, the repealing of the Stamp Act. So February 10, 1763, the French and Indian War ended with the signing of the Treaty of Paris. The Treaty of Paris is an interesting discussion all by itself. Great Britain defeated the French and the North American Indian allies, gaining control of French Canada, east of the Mississippi and Spanish Florida. On October 7, 1763, King George III issued the Proclamation of 1763, reserving lands west of the Appalachian Mountains for Indian tribes and prohibiting colonists from settling there. 1764, April 5, the Sugar Act tax was imposed by Britain as a means to generate revenue to pay for the defense and protection of the American colonies, ostensibly, you might say. 1765, March 22nd, British Parliament passed the Stamp Act, which imposed a tax on legal papers and other printed goods as a means to pay for British troops in America. And the colonists expressed dissatisfaction, obviously, with the first direct tax on the colonies. Sons of Liberty was formed to protest this legislation, and colonists created a Stamp Act Congress that prepared a resolution that King George III rescind the Stamp Act. March 24, 1765, the Quartering Act was issued, requiring colonists to provide food and housing to British troops. This act quickly led to tension between the colonists and British troops. And then, as I say, fast forward to this day in 1766, and Parliament repealed the Stamp Act. And then in 1767, there were the Townshend Acts, which imposed new duties on certain imported goods to the American colonies. These acts were met with resistance from the colonists and led to British occupation of Boston in 1768. So these were the early rumblings of the revolution. And it's fascinating to me that these were things that got some folks upset in those days. And today in America, is there anything that will truly disturb Americans, so to speak? Some of us get upset about a thing or two, but I genuinely wonder if there is anything that will disturb Americans, because I think, generally speaking, we're mostly fat and happy, which is part of the plan. It was always planned that way, right, dear comrades? So, yesterday, we were having some interesting conversations, and I kind of want to pick up where we left off to some extent, if we can. And the American Freedom News is running ads. Have you been to the site? You see that little image there? Speaking of things that get us upset, you know, we should be upset that there are folks trying to pit us against each other. I saw a video. What is that? I didn't actually watch it. Like all of the alerts, it showed up. The Economic Policy Institute. New video from the Economic Policy Institute. A ridiculous video. Not worth the waste of time to watch it. Economic Policy Institute. So this is one of those places, yeah, the Black Agenda, State of Working America podcast. That's what it was a couple days ago. And there have been a number of these fun things. I don't know if you've seen any of these videos, but, you know, I cringe to even try to explain. One of the other more recent videos, the challenge of building a high road electric vehicle industry with anti-union employers. It's just sort of a study in bad things. A high road electric vehicle industry with anti-union employers. So, American Freedom News, if you visit the homepage, there's that graphic in the right-hand column. Subscribe to the Freedom Times, and the little graphic, you know, that reads "All Human Differences." This is from April 2022, number 387. All human differences are social constructs now. And so this obviously speaks to the agenda that would have everybody fighting against each other. M&Ms that can't seem to get along. Destroy patriarchy. But actually, patriarchy is just a pseudonym for men. And historically, society, you know, men are supposed to be the protectors of society, and that concept has been weaponized. People have been led to believe that's male dominance and patriarchy and so forth. And so now here we are, and we ought not be fighting. But we have been pitted against each other nonetheless, and we don't seem interested to take the time to get to know one another. It's a strange paradox. You know, the social media aspect of life obviously makes far too much public, and I've talked about that. You know, how if you read Blackstone's commentaries, what our public conduct is supposed to be exemplary and above reproach. And if we offend in public, then Essentially, we must be prosecuted in public or prosecuted publicly. But whatever our personal and private proclivities, that's, you know, between us and God, basically, is how Blackstone sort of put it, to paraphrase. But these days, what is private? Already, social media has just about everything publicized, and employers are going further these days. You know, what do you need a credit report for? What do you need all of these background checks and things? I mean, is there nothing private anymore? And the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab want to take it even further, obviously. There was World Economic Forum back in 2016, the session, What If Your Brain Confesses? And, you know, this sort of gets into the implant discussion from yesterday, but what if your brain confesses? Long the preserve of stage shows. Where's the video on that post? At the moment, the technology is in its infancy and has been primarily focusing on aiding communication and movement for disabled people. But the fact that scientists can already identify some words that people are thinking is an extraordinary step. Experts in the brain decoding field acknowledge that accurate interpretations of a person's thoughts and memories remain a long way off, but there's no doubt that technology in this area is advancing steadily. If people's inner worlds could be accessed, it would have a profound effect. Who, if anyone, would we agree to share this world with? Under what circumstances would we countenance someone's thoughts being accessed by force? You know, Harari essentially said as much 4 years later. This is what is being pushed for. So what will be private at this point? If people's inner worlds could be accessed, you know, Facebook and the metaverse, obviously, same thing. Not only trying to access these things, and sometimes by force or coercion or persuasion, and where is the difference in some cases? I would submit when it comes to these folks in this context, there is no difference. There is, coercion would be a more honest way to put it. And that is the effort. So, what is private in that context? And again, you know, if you read Blackstone's commentaries, which are, well, were at one point in America essential to understanding the rules of the road, so to speak, you realize that this is, I mean, so you take this concept together with man's sinful fallen nature, and what do you get? You get the ultimate weaponization of man's nature. And if you can take away his understanding of his sinful fallen nature so that he doesn't realize or is not honest, is not confronted with the fact of his sinful fallen nature, then what a coup. You can weaponize that. It's something that he can't escape without the intervention of God and, you know, Jesus Christ himself. And by grace through faith, you know, the help from the Holy Spirit. If he doesn't realize that, then you can introduce the plague, Freudian psychology, and tell him that, you know, you can perfect man. It's okay, we can fix you. All the while just breaking him more and penalizing him for his ignorance or willful blindness to his sinful nature. What a coup. Stick around, I'll be right back.
Good. consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
It's Friday, so just, you know, another interesting aside, which I recently became aware. This, call it controversy, if you will, over swag and schwag, which is interesting. If you go over to Stack Exchange, the English.StackExchange.com, the English language and usage ecosystem over at Stack Exchange, you can find the entry free stuff, swag or schwag, from almost 9 years ago. No, ask 10 years ago, modified almost 9 years ago. This person asked, my company gives out free promotional items with the company name on it. Is this stuff called company swag or schwag? Seems that both come up as common usages. Google searching indicates that the bias is slightly towards swag. Can anybody provide a definite proof of the word etymology, and which one is more correct? So there are interesting answers, but one person answers it is called swag, which some people. Relevant expansion is souvenirs, wearables, and gifts. You know, it is an acronym. Wiktionary defines swag as handouts, freebies, or giveaways, such as those handed out at conventions. It seems that in written English, swag is the way to go. And then, is that a Google Ngram, I think, that is shown? A screenshot, a capture of an engram, I believe. Perhaps the most definitive answer stems from an entry in Francis Gros' Classic Dictionary of the Vulgar Tongue from 1823 with a couple definitions for swag, including a bundle, parcel, or package, as a swag of snow, etc. The swag is a term used in speaking of any booty you have lately obtained, be it of what kind it may, except money, as where did you lumber the swag? That is, where did you deposit the stolen property? So that puts an interesting twist on the term. And continuing, you know, the next popular answer is both are correct, but swag is the earlier word. And the one I would use, it was used for promotional items in 2001. Before this new meaning, I knew it to mean the stuff a thief has stolen, often hauled in a swag bag in cartoons. From Etymology Online, the noun sense of ornamental festoon is first found in 1794, colloquial sense of promotional material, quote-unquote, from recording companies, etc., was in use by 2001. Swag was English criminal slang for quantity of stolen property, loot, from circa 1839. Earlier senses of bulky bag, circa 1300, and big blustering fellow, 1580s, may represent separate borrowings from a Scandinavian source. Stuff we all get is a later acronym or backronym, which, you know, is a fun portmanteau, I guess. The first swag of promo stuff I heard was stickers and so on given out by Flickr mid-last decade as their fun variation of swag. And then there is, you know, parenthetically, this person adds, see also here for swag as low-grade marijuana, possibly from Yiddish. And lastly, this person adds the edit. Promotional swag dates back to at least 1961, and promotional swag to at least 2001. Of course, one must never underestimate the influence of Wayne's World and Schwing. So there is this post over at Hello Come In back in 2008, word usage of swag versus swag, and It's interesting, you know, the Yiddish influence particularly suggests a Yiddish influence on the variant pronunciations and the derivation of swag. Anyway, interesting stuff. Sort of reminds me of folks like Toynbee telling us that language has influence. And so from whence do these things derive? Tavistock, perhaps? Stick around.
Right, you are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Welcome back. So, speaking of yesterday and kind of picking up where we left off, the vote situation, you know, again, the quote is generally attributed to Stalin. It's not who votes that counts, but who counts the votes. And this is an adage that, you know, in various forms dates back to antiquity, Roman Empire kind of stuff, at a minimum. So Clint Curtis, in his own words from Uncounted, the movie, regarding, you know, black box voting, the vote rigging, and the question that he was asked during House Judiciary Committee proceedings, are there programs that can be used to secretly fix elections in a way that no one would know? And here's what he said about that. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Curtis, are there programs that can be used to secretly fix elections?
Yes.
How do you know that to be the case?
Because in October of 2000, I wrote a prototype for President Congressman Tom Feeney at the company I worked for in Oviedo, Florida, that did just that.
And would that program that you designed be something that elections officials could detect?
They'd never see it.
And your testimony is under oath?
Yes, sir.
And the testimony you've given is true?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
In 2000, I was working for Yang Enterprises, which was a company in Oviedo, Florida, and their chief lobbyist, their corporate attorney, and Speaker of the House of Florida was Tom Feeney.
Tom Feeney was the general counsel and registered lobbyist for Yang Enterprises, even while he was Speaker of the Florida House.
He came in one day, one of my first introductions to him, and he wanted us to build a vote-flipping software.
He was asked by Tom Feeney to create essentially a vote-rigging software prototype.
My interpretation initially was that he wanted to prevent you evil Democrats, because I was a Republican, from cheating. So we know how bad you are. So.
He's a Republican, I'm a Republican, which, you know, immediately makes him the good guy right away. So obviously he's not going to try and, you know, steal votes.
He wanted it to run on a Windows platform, be touchscreen capable. He wanted it to not have any additional hardware, so you didn't have to bring in a keyboard, you didn't have to sit across the street in a truck. You could just sit there and punch a button, and the votes all flip.
And the third thing he wanted was that he wanted it so that in the source code, you could not see the fact that it was being flipped. Well, not only is you shouldn't be doing that, but you can't do that. You cannot hide in the source code. Done deal. I can't do it. Nobody else can either.
Tom Feeney is best known for being the guy in the 2000 election. No matter what the Supreme Court decided, he was going to assure that the electoral votes went to George W. Bush. He had previously, in 1994, been the running mate to Jeb Bush in Jeb's initial bid for governor in Florida, which he lost.
So I built it for him, gave it to Mrs. Yang along with the sheet on how you prevent vote fraud. She said, "You don't understand. In order to get this contract, we have to hide the vote fraud in the source code. This is to flip the vote in South Florida."
Which, you know, I'm thinking, what are you, a crook?
We can only assume that that's what Feeney told her. For some reason, that's what she felt, that's what she knew, and that's what she told Clint Curtis. And that's what he has in his sworn affidavit.
That's probably enough. Gives you the general idea. And this is a bigger story, too. So yesterday I mentioned, Julie says, did they kill this guy? No. But they did. I mean, you know, it's a matter of opinion, because he has been unpersoned on Wikipedia. And what does that mean? So, you know, I mentioned the Internet Archive for Clint Curtis yesterday, and you can go back to August of last year. You know, how many things have been discussed on this broadcast? Not that it's this broadcast, but I think it's interesting how many things, more and more things I notice that, you know, people say, what's wrong with the internet? Why don't you recommend the internets for information and so forth? Well, the internets can be changed or, you know, gone away with. I mean, how can you set something up on the internets in perpetuity? It's kind of like owning property in Hawaii. If you're not a native, then it's just a lease. Maybe it's a 99-year lease, but it's a lease nonetheless. You don't really own it. And you certainly can't pass it on to posterity like John Adams was suggesting that we do, or exhorting us and even admonishing us to do. to William Tudor back in 1818, gather up every shred of evidence that you can from the era and preserve it for posterity's sake. So you can find the entry from last year, Wikipedia articles for deletion, Clint Curtis. Why would you do that? And there is this person. This is just, I don't know, just kind of a fascinating aside. It's Friday. We can do this. Phone lines are open, by the way. Feel free to call in. Local call in 512-248-8252. Again, 512-248-8252. And toll free if you don't have free long distance, 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. So, this entry, Wikipedia articles for deletion, Clint Curtis. The following discussion is an archived debate of the proposed deletion of the article below. That's the Clint Curtis article. And there are find sources used or consulted. Google, which includes Google Books, Google News, Google Scholar, Google Images, and Wikipedia references from Google. The Free English newspaper source, JSTOR, New York Times, and the Wikipedia library. That sounds like a pretty controlled group of sources, so-called. There was, you know, it wasn't that long ago teachers said don't use Wikipedia as a source because you can't rely on it. It's funny how, as Jaron Lanier points out, it has become the Oracle illusion now all of a sudden. Isn't it the same thing? You know, isn't it just people behind the Oracle illusion, or is it now artificial intelligence? You have people like this, M. Bizans, the result of the conversation was a delete. This person is instrumental in, or this user, I should say, more properly. It's interesting. Clint Curtis testified before Congress about something that I would argue affects us all. He was directly involved. Passed the lie detector test. Doesn't seem to be. How does he benefit if he tells this story? What advantage? So, it's interesting how this argument unfolds. But without getting into that, this user, M. Bizans, articles written, quite a few articles. Where is it? Number of edits. Oh, edits. 143,000 edits. Edits plus deleted. 177,204. Pages deleted, 72,512. On and on. So, it's also interesting, provocative. Some of the, I don't know, the things that just sort of catch my attention, you know, this user in pictorial form, user boxes, this user is a member of Phi Theta Kappa, International Honor Society. This user is a member of Phi Beta Kappa. I mean, maybe that's no big deal. And then scrolling down, it's interesting that this whole, I don't know, this is kind of a metaverse all of its own at Wikipedia, has its own sort of Masonic / mythological component. And under experience for this user is listed this editor is a Grandmaster Editor First Class. A Grandmaster Editor First Class. Aleister Crowley would be proud. And is entitled to display this Mithril Editor Star. Mithril Editor Star. Neutronium with the Neutronium Superstar Hologram. So, Neutronium is a hypothetical substance. The word was coined by scientist Andreas von Antropov in 1926 for the hypothetical element of atomic number zero that he placed at the head of the periodic table. However, the meaning has changed over time. And mithril is a fictional metal found in J.R.R. Tolkien's writings. He sort of reminds you of Peter Thiel's Palantir. Anyway, strange. And of Peter Thiel, and you know, this kind of stuff, Peter Thiel isn't residing in America anymore, right? So that reminds me of the resignations that we started hearing about. They've been going on for quite some time, but Peter Thiel is one of those folks. He resigned earlier this year, last month actually, February 7, from Meta Platforms as a board member. You know, Peter Thiel is, speaking of Facebook and Meta Platforms, Thiel was the guy credited with giving Facebook its first $500,000 in venture capital through Clarium back in the day. I would basically call Clarium an NQTEL surrogate, kind of like lots of other things, you know, Menlo Park, Sequoia, and Batman, who migrated to Montana. William in Montana and I used to have conversations about that. But you know, it's interesting. Who's who in the zoo? I mean, who's a lackey? Who's a front person? Who's a bagman for the criminal syndicate, the devil's racket? Who is and doesn't know it? You know, it's interesting to me. Peter Thiel, gosh, man, nobody has been more, I think, straightforward, candid, and forthcoming about certain things. Guy who is a Bilderberg steering committee member, or has been, that's something, you know. Spent time at Sullivan and Cromwell. Palantir is nothing to sneeze at. And, you know, again, at the forefront of Facebook, right at the time that the CIA was trying to reach in a little further and get people to authenticate with their real creds, Facebook shows up, and we don't even remember what MySpace was. What is MySpace? So Peter Thiel's an interesting figure. Jeff Zucker, speaking of resignations, Jeff Zucker also resigned as president of CNN last month, which is interesting. I think there are a lot of these resignations that have gone on in recent years and even recent months. You know, Devin Nunes back in December, becoming CEO at Trump Media and Technology Group. Does anybody remember Chris Cuomo amid the continuing inquiry into his efforts to help his brother? And of course, his brother resigning. Leslie H. Wexner, another curious figure. Peter DeFazio, speaking of other government officials recently, that was back in December also, House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure, Jack Dorsey, replaced by Parag Agrawal, Brett Biggs at Walmart. And the list goes on and on. That's just recently, within the last, 6 to 12 months. And then, of course, there's the mass exodus as COVID became a thing, or allegedly a thing. Anyway, that's sort of an aside. I'll get back to this other stuff from yesterday. We'll go to the phones when we come back. Stick around.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org. And click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Welcome back. Final segment of the first hour. To the phones we go. Larkin, Texas, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Don't worry about it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Right on.
Good morning. Good morning. I wanted to weigh in.
Yeah.
I have to say that I am not a fan of voting any more than I'm a fan of watching the television. Harkening back to Bush v. Gore, 2000 election.
Yeah.
If you recall, we had Ted Olson, the Solicitor General, representing the Bush camp. You had David Boies representing Gore. And, I mean, even that was farcical. You know, you might recall Ted Olson was married to Barbara Olson, who was a Fox News commentator. Always real chirpy, you know, Barbara Olson. Well, mm-hmm. she apparently died on one of those planes.
Yeah.
On 9/11.
Yeah.
And then 6 years later, good old Ted marries Lady Booth, who is a spitting image of Barbara Olson.
Mm-hmm.
You could look at the pictures on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he was compromised. But, you know, going back in time, you know, there was a famous Stoic expression, and that was abstain from beans, spelled A-B-S-T-A-I-N, abstain from beans. And, you know, the late Robert Lefebvre wrote an article for Lou Rockwell. If you just type those words in a search engine, he talks about why the Stoics suggested that the Greeks abstained from beans. And in ancient Greece, the way they voted is they would use different colored beans, and they would deposit them in some kind of receptacle, and of course, the count of those various colored beans was associated, each color was associated with a particular candidate. But, you know, look at the information we got from the Collier brothers and then Bev Harris. You know, if we ever want to see any real change in this country, maybe if we just had a mass revolt about elections.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought this idea, and of course, when we saw this stage show on TV, I remember the Jewish guy pulling out his magnifying glass to see if there was a hanging chad.
Right.
Or not. Because that was to let everybody know that, well, we need something, you know, more efficient. And so let's just go to this electronic voting. You know, and anybody that trusts the techie, you know, the coders and the programmers behind the scenes, or a damn thing about anything, is out of their minds.
Yeah.
You know, we already live in a surveillance society. You know, we live in a digital panopticon.
Mm-hmm.
And all these coders and programmers and tech-happy, tech-crazy people, I mean, they're going to look back and be very proud of themselves one day. You know, how they actually built the spider's web that will ensnare every American.
Yeah, it's not just a web, it's the interwebs. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, this is beyond amazing to me. You know,
if you can hang around, let's continue in the second hour.
Okay, cool.
All right. Stick around, folks. Second hour coming up. We'll be right back.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.